Welcome, everyone, on the tail end of this February Sunday. I think February just should be wiped off the map for a number of reasons. One is it's cold and it's dingy and it's depressing, and my birthday falls in February, so I would be a lot younger without February's going forward. Just a thought. Maybe someone is going to pass a law that way sometime soon. Anyway, let's get right started with our first guest. I gave you a little introduction prior to 3 o'clock about what we're going to be talking about. We talk a lot on this show about how relationships between the law and psychology are very, very closely bound. As a good lawyer, I think you need to understand personality disorders, people's motivations, and how they're wired. And so I've kind of studied a little bit about narcissism in my business. When I did criminal defense work, I needed to understand that. And as a family law lawyer, you see a lot of narcissists in the family law system because it is very difficult to keep a relationship with somebody who has these tendencies. So today I have a guest who not only experienced a very high profile relationship with a very well-known narcissist, but she also went on to get a PhD. She writes about the issue. She talks about it. She talks about what we call trauma bonds. Dr. Nadine Macaluso is a licensed psychotherapist, expert in trauma bonds and narcissistic abuse. And you may have seen her character portrayed by in the movie The Wolf of Wall Street. And she was portrayed by Margot Robbie. She's the author of the fabulous book, Run Like Hell, A Therapist's Guide to Recognizing, Escaping, and Healing from Trauma Bonds. I've read it. It's an excellent book. Dr. Macaluso, thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
I'm good, Karen. Thank you so much for having me. I look so forward to our talk.
I do, too. I find this fascinating. And, you know, one of the things that I think we're going to talk about, and I think our listeners will respond to it, is that as strange as some of these disorders are, they're kind of strange in the same ways, and you see these patterns. And I think today what I would like to get out of this conversation is to tell our listeners, you know, how to spot these trauma bonds, how to not to avoid them maybe, and to how to extricate yourself from them. But I want to start a little bit about The Wolf of Wall Street. If you've seen the movie, everyone, it was about Jordan Belfort, portrayed by Leonardo DiCaprio. He's this big shot financial guy. He gets into trouble. Dr. Macaluso, can you tell me how you met Belfort and who you were before and how you got wrapped up in your relationship with him?
Yes, sure. So I grew up in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, New York, hence the name The Duchess of Bay Ridge. And as the movie The Wolf of Wall Street depicts, I went to a party in the Hamptons when I was 22 years old with my boyfriend, and I show up to this big, beautiful white house in West Hampton on June Road, and hence there's a party going on. And I guess that was the night that my ex, the Wolf of Wall Street, set his sights on me. But I left the party rather quickly. Movie shows, they were all high on Quaaludes, and someone exposed themselves to me, so that should have been a red flag, but again, I didn't know what red flag was back then. At the party immediately.
So he charmed you, I take it, after that, and you fell into a relationship with him. He was all charm and intelligence and good looks and all of that, right?
Yes, you know, and typical with the trauma bond, he was so charming, so magnanimous. And as I said, he set his sights on me and became obsessed with me. And so it just felt like such flattering adoration. And he fell madly in love right away.
So, and then when was the first time you really saw the problems that were going to arise in this relationship? What are the red flags that you saw? And I'm asking you these questions, and they're personal, but I think it's important because you studied this, and you studied this from a psychological standpoint, but you also lived through it. So what were those red flags looking back?
Yeah, so looking, those red flags were my ex did not respect my boundaries at all. So when we met, as I mentioned, I was very young, and I wasn't ready to get married or have children. But he started to threaten and dominate me and say to me, if you don't have children, I'm not going to marry you. If you don't, you know, marry me, I'm not going to date you. And so there were all these threats and intimidation and domination when I tried just to set a healthy boundary.
And so let's just wrap this part of it up. You were married to him for how long? And then he gets accused and convicted of what crimes? And then he goes to jail. Just give our listeners a little bit of timeline on this.
Yes. So we were engaged in 6 months, married in a year, and then we were together for 8 years. And as the movie depicts, it was a crazy, wild ride. He was very addicted to drugs, and he was emotionally abusive and verbally abusive, one time physically abusive. And I wanted to leave, feel trapped. And then he did get arrested. And he got an ankle bracelet for 11 counts of money laundering. And I knew that was my window to leave.
And in some way, that was a blessing for you, because leaving is not always the easiest thing to do, as we're going to discuss after we take this break. And we're going to be talking some more to Dr. Nadine Macaluso, author of the book Run Like Hell, A Therapist's Guide to Recognizing, Escaping, and Healing from Trauma Bonds. We'll be back in a minute. You were listening to an interview with Jordan Belfort, who is the Wolf of Wall Street portrayed by Leonardo DiCaprio. Today, we're talking to his ex-wife, Nadine Macaluso. She has a PhD. She's an author, and she talks and counsels in the area of narcissism. You know, as I listen to that interview, Dr. Macaluso, I hear that he is just pleased with himself for having this movie about him, even though the movie puts him in jail and shows that he was cheating and doing bad things financially. What when you hear his voice talking about that, what comes to mind?
What comes to mind is that I'm not surprised, right? Because when you think about a grandiose narcissist, they are larger than life and they love attention. And even though they're very into their image and you think he might be concerned that it doesn't portray him in the best light, you have to remember he wrote the book. So he was the one who actually portrayed himself in this light.
Interesting. And from your knowledge, is he out there just speaking and giving motivational talks and hawking his services, right?
He is, correct. Yep, he has totally rebuilt his life.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit about some definitions in your book. It's a very, very good book, and I think everyone should read this book, because even if you don't have a relationship with a narcissist, you know, you might have a daughter, you might have a sister, or you might run into someone in the workplace who have these tendencies, and you really need to understand how to deal with them, because you're not probably going to change them. Let's start with defining what you call traumatic bonding. Tell our listeners what that is.
Yeah, so traumatic bonding is any toxic relationship between two emotionally attached people. It can be between a boss and employee. It can be between a parent and an adult child. It can be between friends. But I write about it between lovers. But wait, what makes it different is that one of the partners, usually the pathological partner, wants power and control over their partner, their lover.
And so, you know, both men and women can be victimized. I'm not going to pick on men here. But I think maybe for purposes of our discussion, let's use those genders, that the woman is going to be the victim. Again, insert man whenever you feel like it here. But can you give us an example, Dr. Macaluso, of how a relationship would start? Maybe we have a John and a Mary. They're in, you know, they meet each other on a dating app or what have you. Tell us, give us the blow by blow of what a typical scenario would be and how it develops into something that is not healthy.
Yeah, so what happens with John and Mary is that they meet, and right away, love bombing starts. And I call that the sweet seduction phase. And that's when this person, the pathological person, wears this mask of Romeo. He's loving and kind and generous and helpful, and he says, "You're my soulmate, and we're two peas in a pod." And he just meets all of her needs, and he just feels like she feels like she met a unicorn. But then what happens as the relationship progresses, Romeo's mask falls and he becomes Dirty John, and you enter into the trauma vortex. Yeah. Where all of the manipulation starts, the gaslighting, the betrayal starts, pathological lying starts. And so the woman in the trauma bond is terribly confused and is like, whiplashed. What happened? Where did Romeo go? And it creates cognitive dissonance, which is total confusion. And the woman doesn't know, is he good or is he bad? And that's the glue of the trauma bond. And then, listen, trauma bonds can last for a week, a month, 10 years. And then what happens? Something happens called the last straw. And this is when the partner usually plans their escape, or sometimes the narcissist will discard the woman. And so that's really the three stages that occur within the trauma bond.
Can we talk a little bit about gaslighting? I hear people use that term more and more these days, but can you give us an example of what a gaslighting situation would be between John and Mary?
Yeah, so a gaslighting situation, this is how it would look. Let's say Mary is lying in bed next to John and they're watching Netflix, but all of a sudden John goes to the bathroom and leaves his phone there. And then Mary looks over and sees that while he's in bed with her, he's texting another woman. And when he comes back and she confronts him, he said, no, I was doing that for my friend. You didn't see that. So he totally denies her reality and convinces her that what she saw, she did not see.
And, I mean, and I've seen this too, where then he starts to disparage her, you know, like,
yes.
You know, like, what were you doing looking? And are you mentally okay? And didn't your mother
exactly.
do this to you, to your father? Oh, you know, so
exactly.
Something's pathological here, which I find to be just ingenious, you know, because it obviously puts the victim in a very defensive position and
correct.
Turns the whole thing around in a way
correct.
That makes
correct.
No sense.
Yes. Yes. Correct.
So Dr. Macaluso, we're going to take this slowly. But so during this love bombing phase, where you know he knows everything, he knows your favorite flowers. He may even like go on Facebook and see things that you've said, and he's mimicking what you have said and what you like. How does a person at this stage, you know, you're dating online, you met somebody, you know, you're finding this person fascinating and wonderful and charming. How do you step back and say, is this real? Are there some tells during this love bombing period that are the red flags?
Yeah, so there are tells. And one of them was what I mentioned earlier, is try to set a boundary with this person. Tell them what you will tolerate and won't tolerate. If they say to you, hey, I hear that. Great. If they go crazy and get defensive and angry, that's a huge red flag. If even though on the first or second date or third date, they're telling you, I can't believe I met you, you're incredible, but they have 10 drinks, that's a problem. Or if you're with them and all of a sudden you have an emotional need and they just disregard it and make fun of you for it, that's also a problem. And so you'll see little things like words not matching actions. They claim to be so in love with you and that they are generous, kind, and helpful towards you. But you notice that in actuality, they're not acting like that. And if you question them again and they get defensive, run like hell.
Which is part of the title of your book, which is called Run Like Hell, A Therapist's Guide to Recognizing, Escaping, and Healing from Trauma Bonds. If anyone has a question for Dr. Macaluso, I'm going to give out the number here, 312-981-7200. Okay, so one of the things that I was surprised about in your book is the victimology here, because there is a thought that, oh, you have to be a weak person to fall for this BS, right? You have to be a person who is so needy and so open to abuse, but that is not the case.
No, that is not the case at all. And that is one of the reasons why I wrote my book, was to turn the stigma of the victim on its head. We've said she's codependent, she has learned helplessness, she has a bad picker. That's not the truth. The truth is that anyone and everyone can fall for a con man, right? That's trying to trick us into loving them. But also my research and the research of Sandra Brown showed that there are certain types of women that are actually highly agreeable, very organized, driven, together women, that what happens is they have these beautiful traits of being loyal and trusting and driven and kind, and they have integrity, and those traits get weaponized by the narcissistic pathological lover.
Very, very interesting. And so let's talk about another concept that is in your book, which is intermittent abuse. Can you explain what that is and give us an example of it?
Sure. So intermittent abuse or intermittent reinforcement is actually what causes the bond in the trauma bond. And what it is that 70% of the time, this partner is cruel, controlling, betraying, and unkind. And that's the Dirty John part. But 30% of the time, as I mentioned, they're kind and generous and helpful and loving. And so those extreme behaviors of cruelty and kindness create extreme feelings inside of us. And that is actually what creates the bond in the trauma bond.
Do you see that these narcissists are people who will isolate as well? And I see that when I do family law, in that sometimes the pathological partner is the one who kind of pulls that victim in and says, you know, your family is not helpful to you, and maybe even move away from a place where they call home. Do you see that as a common tactic?
I do see that as a common tactic. Isolation is a form of coercive control, domination, intimidation, isolation. These are all methods for the pathological partner to have control over her.
Well, we are going to take a break in a little bit, and we do have a caller who said, I'm sure the doctor is very well prepared. However, she seems like she's going after John, and I see what the texter probably means, going after men. And I just want to reiterate, because maybe the texter didn't hear me, but I said that this can happen to both genders, both ways, and for purposes of our discussion today, we are talking about women being the victim. But I think when we come back, Dr. Macaluso, that I want to talk a little bit about when the genders are reversed and the woman is the narcissist. Are there different elements to this dynamic? And for men out there who are with narcissists, because I see that very often, what are the tricks of trying to recognize that and to deal with it? But let's just talk one time about your book. When did your book first get published?
Yeah, my book got published on January 9th, 2024, so it's been out for a year now.
And where can our listeners find it? Run Like Hell, A Therapist's Guide to Recognizing, Escaping, and Healing from Trauma Bonds.
Yes, they can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, where books are sold, or they can go to my website, drnae.com, and get a signed copy from me.
Oh, fabulous. Let's take a break, and you're listening to the best radio station in Chicago, WGN. Welcome back. That was from The Wolf of Wall Street. I have with me The Wolf of Wall Street's former wife, who is now a PhD, and she has written a wonderful book, a very helpful book for a lot of people, Run Like Hell, A Therapist's Guide to Recognizing, Escaping, and Healing from Trauma Bonds. I have a texter who had a really great little narrative here, Dr. Macaluso, and it was a question that I was going to ask, but it's even better coming from this text. She said, I have been married to my husband since 1985. I have only within the last decade started to realize how I have been manipulated. He moved us away from my family and friends. Whenever I was working, he would complain about my hours, so I would quit. And then he would tell me to leave, how I don't contribute. Then he cheated and blamed on me. There have been a lot more things I want to leave, but my adult children may not see it because their relationship was different. Is there any advice for a person who's almost 60 years old? So this is a person who stayed with somebody who probably has these tendencies. What advice would you give to her?
What I would say is it's never too late, okay? 60 is still young, and the way this caller is describing all of these attributes, she is seeing the situation so clearly. And what I would suggest is start to make a plan to leave. You don't have to tell your children. You don't have to tell your partner. In fact, it's best that you don't. But make sure your bank accounts are okay, like you have your own. Make sure you have a credit card in your name. And make sure that you put everything in order so that when you do decide to leave, because you probably will, you can tell everybody, but you have a clear strategic plan, and then you can execute it. But it is certainly not too late to leave. I promise you that.
And I would add to that, from a legal standpoint, is to talk to a very good family law attorney.
Yes.
Because and an attorney who understands this issue, because a lot of family law lawyers say, I don't need to know your personal stuff. I'll just divide up your stuff and whatever. But you're going to need somebody who understands the control that's going to happen, the anger that's going to happen, and how the lashing out from the spouse is going to affect this entire family, financially, children, everything. And I think that's right, to come up with a strategy. And I would add to that, you know, maybe a therapist involved and get your family involved.
Yes.
Obviously, children make it complicated because, you know, children have different relationships with these individuals. And thank you for sharing that. I think it's really important, and I hope some of this advice was helpful to you. You know, Dr. Macaluso, when we took a break, we're talking about narcissism in terms of the woman being the victim, but of course that's not always the case. When a woman is a narcissist and gets involved in a loving relationship, and I put that in quotes, what do you see differently? I mean, women are different than men in a relationship.
Of course.
How do you see that happen? How do you see that play out?
Yeah, female narcissists are often more emotional than male narcissists, which makes them highly sensitive and reactive. And this sensitivity can make them much more prone to feeling hurt, right? So they can feel offended or upset by others. Maybe they're more thin-skinned. And so due to that, they might lash out, become moody, or shut down when they feel wounded. And that is one way to really see that in them.
So they use that as a way to get what they want, to manipulate.
Yeah, yep. They will. And they need, like I said, a lot. And they need a lot more validation. And they need a lot more praise and reassurance. And then when they don't get that, they can become jealous and upset and moody and brooding. And the male partner is like, wait, what's happening? I'm loving, I'm kind to you. But they don't really see all the good qualities of their partner. And they project a lot of their negative qualities onto their partner.
Interesting. So just putting yourself in the shoes of a person who has narcissistic tendencies, what is it about doing the things that the narcissist does, this controlling behavior, the gaslighting, the love bombing, the, you know, disparaging, cheating? What about all of those things? What is the narcissist getting from those behaviors?
So I have a very simple sentence that I say. The narcissist will lie, harm, exploit, and betray anybody and anyone to get their needs met for money, power, pleasure, and status.
And so it's all about serving that person's goals and needs, whatever that might be.
Yes, yes. We are just all tools on the tool belt.
Now, let's talk a little bit about domestic violence. And I think domestic violence, to me at least, is a sliding scale, because I think that emotional abuse, financial abuse, and physical abuse are different gradations of the same thing. Is it fair to say that not all narcissists are physically abusive, but that most physically abusive partners are narcissists? Is that true for the most part?
Yeah, I would say that is true. Yeah. Yep. I mean, and again, not all narcissists, like you say, are physically abusive, but that's why I use the term pathological lover, because I believe that anybody that would exploit, harm, and betray anybody to get their needs met is mentally unwell, and that means that they're pathological.
I have a texter. I was 60 when I left my narcissistic husband after 15 years. He made the divorce much more difficult than it needed to be, but we got through it, and 10 years later, I've never been happier. I also had to take ownership of how my codependency had a role in it. Let's unpack that a little bit, Dr. Macaluso. So we see, you're right. You know, you can move on and have a great relationship. I see that all the time with my clients who say they should have done it earlier. I do see that it becomes difficult to do it. I see a lot of people who file for divorce. They get back. They file for divorce again. They might do it four or five times before they finally say, I've had it. This is enough. I'm going to weigh being married to the hassle of going through this. But what about the issue of her being codependent and taking ownership of that? How do you address that?
Yeah, so how I address that is that I don't really use the word codependency, but what I would say is that I think when we've been in this toxic relationship, what we learn often is that we don't know how to say no. We often can people please to keep the peace. We don't know how to have boundaries. And so those are really important skills that we need to have in every relationship. Moving forward.
Do you think, I mean, this is like a bigger question than probably we all can answer, but are women raised in a different way such that they don't have those boundaries as much as men do? Because I see that. I see that women are pleasers. Women want to go along and get along and make everything happy and, you know, to the detriment sometimes of herself.
Yeah. And I mean, listen, carry children, we give birth, right? We are wired through our hormones and our brains and our physiology to be nurturers, to be caretakers, right? And then we're also socialized into it. So I think it's a really unlearning for us to say, you know what, it's okay to say no. It's okay to have boundaries. Self-care is not selfish. And I think that once women understand that, they can live their lives with a lot more vitality and happiness.
We're talking to Dr. Nadine Macaluso. She wrote the book, Run Like Hell, A Therapist's Guide to Recognizing, Escaping, and Healing from Trauma Bonds, available on Amazon. You can go to her website, Dr. N.A., and you can get a signed copy from her. We have about 15 more minutes. Let's take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you probably the most important thing is, when you spoke with actress Margot Robbie, what did you tell her about how to play yourself in the movie? That's a good question. We'll be back in a minute. We're talking to Dr. Nadine Macaluso, and we just had a texter from a man. So we see this on both sides of the gender issue. Thank you so much for this segment. This 100% describes my ex-wife. I never had the words to describe it. I was always walking on eggshells and felt like a shell of a person. Is that do those words ring true to a lot of people who you consult with on these issues?
Yes, I think the statement, walking on eggshells, is the perfect description. You never know who you're coming home to.
And now the important question. The Wolf of Wall Street was played by your ex-husband, Jordan Belfort, portrayed by Leonardo DiCaprio in the movie by the same name. And your character was portrayed by Margot Robbie, which is wonderful. And you do resemble her very much, which is a nice compliment. And when she talked to you and you had a discussion with her, she was consulting with you, what is it that you told her about your character that you thought was important for her to know?
Yes. So I got to meet Margot Robbie, and she was such a sweetheart. She was 22 at the time, and they wanted to get my ridiculous Brooklyn accent. And so we took her to dinner, and she was talking to me about, she was so afraid to tell Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio about the naked scene. She didn't want to do it. And I said to her right there, see, you have that fear of speaking your truth to power. That's how I felt every single day in my marriage. And if you can embody that, you will nail it.
Interesting. And what do you think when you saw the movie? Did she do a good job portraying you?
I thought she did an excellent job. I really just thought she was very nuanced in that she loved her children, loved this crazy man, but she had a strength in her and she stood up to him. And I thought she did a wonderful job.
Great. So let's talk about helping others. So, you know, we talked a little bit about how to extricate yourself from this situation, about how to get your support next to you and get coming up with a plan financially, emotionally, and legally, and all of those things. But let's just say you have a sister or a friend, and you're watching the love bombing, you're watching the isolation, you're watching the intermittent abuse. So it's like all of a sudden he's nice, then he's not. And a lot of these people, if you go out to dinner with them, you'll even see it right in your presence, which is very disturbing to watch your friend get abused or given the cold shoulder. So tell me how you would take aside a sister or a friend and advise them on how to get help.
Yeah. So what I would do is I would say to them, you yourself get really educated about this toxic relationship because it is a very complex dynamic. And what I would say to them is don't judge your sister, because she's already feels so much shame with what that she's going through. What I suggest that you do is just keep listening to her, validating her experience. Don't judge it. And then keep the lines of communication open, because when she's ready to leave or he's ready to leave, they're going to need you to help them get out of it.
And so many times you see people who finally need to leave, finally made that decision, and they feel like they've severed all of those good connections, and and they don't have anywhere to jump. And sometimes that even causes them to stay in the relationship because there's nowhere to go, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
So, just curious, do you ever have a relationship with Jordan Belfort anymore? Do you ever have occasion to speak to him?
I do. You know, the thing about my situation, which was unique, was that my ex got arrested. So the power imbalance shifted. He no longer had the power once he was wearing the ankle bracelet with the FBI. So I was very lucky, and we actually were able to raise our children. We were really able to co-parent them. And so we do have a relationship. In fact, I had him over my house the day the movie came out. Now I don't have a relationship with him as much anymore. My children are older, but we do share a grandchild. And we were able to put our differences aside and actually parent together, which was a miracle.
That is a miracle. And that's wonderful to hear. It is so wonderful to hear, because I'm sure your children got a huge benefit from that.
Correct.
You know, and this is not really your book, because your book more deals with narcissism in terms of a love relationship as opposed to parental or an employment relationship. But how does narcissism play, if you can just give us a little sketch on how that plays when you have a parent who is a narcissist? So, for instance, let's say that you are a mom raising children and you get divorced and dad's a narcissist and he has some of these tendencies and these qualities. So how do you talk to your children about that to protect them, or do you just let them experience the situation themselves?
Yeah, so what I did with my own children was that I was very direct with them, and I named it. I have a saying, you have to name things to tame them. And I said, your dad was an addict and he was abusive to me. I didn't disparage him, right? I told them the facts. And then I said, but you know what? He's your dad, and you're going to figure out your own relationship with him. And I am here to support you through that. But, you know, you are dealing with a person who has a very interesting personality, and they know that.
Well, he's an interesting person. You do have to say that. I mean, he's out there. He's charming. He's obviously intelligent. And I suppose there's a part where you take the good parts and understand the bad parts.
Right, because you have to remember, you know, this child is 50% of that person. So they're going to feel it very personally if you continually disparage them. And I'm not saying that in most cases it's very easy to do that. But if you can just pause and think about how it will affect them, I think it's just easier on them.
And that's something that we have spoken about on this show, Dr. Macaluso, which is the parental alienation issue. And April has a date, which is like parental alienation month or date or something. We're going to talk about it. But, you know, you see a lot of narcissists, in fact, who, mm-hmm. you know, have a relationship, ex-relationship, and they start bad-mouthing the other party. And it's just so toxic because, as you said, if you're a child and you know half of your genetic code is mom and half your genetic code is dad, and the one half is saying the other half is rotten and horrible and awful, how does that make that child feel? You know,
exactly. So,
and it is hard to put aside some of your own emotions to encourage
and
your children.
That's why we have therapy.
that's absolutely right. So, Dr. Macaluso, are you heading toward another book, or what? Tell us what you're doing these days. Are you speaking? I know you do psychotherapy for clients. Why don't you tell us what you're doing?
Yes. So I have a private practice, and then also, just this month, I launched a Trauma Bond Recovery Community, and this week I am launching my Trauma Bond Recovery course, because it's very expensive to come to therapy, and I really wanted to democratize all of this information that I have and disseminate it. and have it accessible for people everywhere. So it's very exciting. I've been working on it for a year, and it's finally all launching.
That's interesting. And can you just expand on that for 1 minute, the community? What is the community? You have
the
Zoom?
The community is amazing. It's we have two to three support groups weekly. We do live weekly talks with experts. It's off of social media, and it's all Sir Thrivers, as I call them. And they have just a community and a wealth of information to share and have support.
And why don't you give the title of your book? I had two texters say, Karen, you talk too fast. So we wanted to write it down. I actually texted a couple of them with the name. But could you slowly tell us the name of your book and where we can buy your book and where we can reach you on your website?
Sure. So the name of my book is Run Like Hell, A Therapist's Guide to Recognizing, Escaping, and Healing from Trauma Bonds. You can get it on Amazon or drnae.com. And you can also find so many free assessments and guided meditations and all about my community on my website. Or you can also find me at The Real Dr. Nadine on Instagram. Please direct message me because I personally answer all of them.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. It's a pleasure, and I hope you come back soon. We have a lot of good feedback. And obviously, you touched a lot of people by talking to me today, and I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Karen. Have a lovely evening.
You too.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.